ruin from the Desert Storm by Blue Sunshine, read by Sam Gabriel, based on the works of George Lucas. Chapter 2.
"Well, Padawan, what do you think?" Ben asks, settling himself next to his Padawan on the long couch lining one corner of the ship's lounge, datapad in hand, another four piled next to Obi-Wan, who was curled as tightly into the corner as he could be.
"I think that the representative from the Nemordian sector keeps watching me," Obi-Wan replies, flickering a glance in Art Bode's direction. Bode's metallic red eyes shift, and the Padawan simmers with suspicion.
"That is because he knows better than to watch a full-fledged Jedi Master, and we make him nervous," Ben replies, amusement trickling through their still distressingly weak bond.
"Now your opinion on the reports, if you please."
Obi-Wan chews on his lip for a moment, fingers tapping on the datapad.
"I think we have a lot of information regarding the Yamri, and next to none at all about the Kalish invaders. We have all these reports and documents, but the information is entirely one-sided. It's biased."
"And?" Obi-Wan squints at his master, wondering what he's missed, his neck itching where he can feel the gaze of Representative Bode once more. It clicks. The other odd thing about the Yamri plea to the Republic. It wasn't submitted by the Yamri.
"And it was the Trade Federation who pled the case in the Senate. The Yamri aren't even a part of the Galactic Republic, but they clearly have connections,"
Obi-Wan adds.
"Yes, and how very fortunate for them, isn't it, that a Nemordian representative was one of the randomly selected officials tasked with establishing contact and deciding whether or not to intercede in their crisis?"
His master leans back, looking very relaxed and casual as he offers a pleasant smile to Bode, who flinches and turns away from them from across the room. Obi-Wan eyes the Nemordian's back.
"You're saying they made sure they had a hand in the decision? They're not supposed to be able to do that. It's not fair."
"Politicians are rarely fair, Obi-Wan," Ben chides bluntly. "They're politicians. But what can we surmise from their heavy-handedness?"
"That this is important to them,"
Obi-Wan states the obvious.
"They have something at stake in the outcome."
"And?" Ben prods, as he always does.
"And it means things may not be as they seem," Obi-Wan tries,
and is rewarded with a fond tug on his Padawan braid.
"Exactly."
Kirsk, the capital city of Tavorsky, and not yet under attack by the Kalish, is a lot of organically shaped structures, domes and rises and bowed tunnels, prominent greens and yellows letting the city blend into the terrain when viewed from above. The Yamri are a tall insectoid species, and they tower above the delegates with bulbous-eyed heads on long tapered necks, and their cutting-bladed forearms were a passive threat every time they move. Lusurn, the Keldor ambassador, was the only one of the four representatives that seemed unbothered by the species, but that may have been because it was difficult to parse any Keldor's expression behind their masks. The final two representatives, excluding Master Nasadeh and Padawan Kenobi, was H.L. Acton, Junior Senator, Udrish Sidran, and Quermian Delegate Pullum Wynn. Obi-Wan, next to three separate species of great height, felt very small. Obi-Wan startled when his master played a hand on his shoulder, stopping him just before they followed the others inside and looked up at Ben, who quietly pointed over the edge.
"Do you see that field?" he inquires casually, and Obi-Wan peers across the view offered from the landing platform. Trees, jungle, hills, rocky field.
"A graveyard?" he inquired, squinting to try and make out the shape of the stones, some of them too level-edged to be natural formations.
"Yamri don't practice burial," Ben reminds him.
Obi-Wan nods at the reminder, wondering what new test this is, because he always, always feels as if his master is testing him, and breathes in, holds it, out, in, drawing his focus to just this one sense, and augmenting his vision with the Force.
"Ruins?"
he asks, when he can better see the shapes and scope, and wondering how his master saw it at all in just a casual glance.
"Yes, ruins," Nasadeh comments,
and then passes his Padawan by and walks inside. The others have not waited for them. Obi-Wan frowns, rubs at his aching eyes, and jogs to catch up. The Emry elected a single individual, Speaker Sadek, as a liaison with the Senate envoy, and it is clear that even he does not enjoy the role. The other Yamri take notice of the delegates, but otherwise do not seem to wish to interact with them at all. It is a trait of xenocentric species, Obi-Wan knows. They had asked the Republic for help, yes, but they aren't pleased about their presence here. Speaker Sadek's grasp of basic is very limited, and they spend much of their first meeting going back and forth with a protocol droid translating between them. Sadek's most convincing argument to the plight of their people, however, is hollow footage. Villages burning, refugees camping out at the edges of the city, the dead lying in the streets, and a single clip of the Kalish themselves, frightful and lethal, cutting down Yamri citizens with sharp-edged shoni spears or lig swords, or firing slunk throwers into a huddle of panicking Yamri.
"This must be stopped,"
Bode booms, slamming a hand down on the table.
"It is clear they act without consequence."
Some of those Yamri had been younglings.
"They take no prisoners, offer no parole, no surrender,"
Lusorn inquires, calm in being, but her aged presence is agitated in the Force.
"They do not." "Have they communicated at all?" "They do not,"
Sadek repeats. Obi-Wan has been silent. He is an observer here and plays no part. His master has also been quiet, watching the Hollows play over and over, listening to the debate on casualties and resources and relief efforts, on the enemy's movements and numbers and tactics, on the necessary force required to push them back.
"Why?"
Nasadeh finally inquires, and the delegates startle a little, having forgotten he was there, falling into familiar patterns of arguments that exist within all Senate actions.
"Why?"
Lusurna repeats, confused. "Historically speaking, across the galaxy, true genocide is perpetrated for very specific reasons. The first is religious orthodoxy. The second is zealous speciesism. The third is retaliation of a perceived harm." Nasadeh lays out the reasoning with all the calm and gravitas expected of the Jedi. "So what precipitated this event?" Sadek's blade limbs click as he shuffles, speaking to the droid which translates.
"They have attacked our colonies and driven our people away from valuable resources, and now they have come for us."
"Greed," Bode spits. "A bid for territory without consent of the rightful possessors."
"A possible explanation," Nasadeh tips his head. His voice and expression give nothing away, but Obi-Wan can feel the doubt his words create.
"You did not answer me," Speaker Sadek. "What were the relations between your peoples prior to this campaign?"
"Does it matter?"
Delegate Pullumwyn inquires.
"Clearly the Yamri are under siege and their people are dying. We can investigate the cause, certainly, but after we've dealt with the violence."
"Dealt with it how?" Nasadeh inquires.
"A proposal has been put forth to send for 50 Jedi and a complement of judicial officers to put a stop to the violence,"
Wynn replies.
"It is not an unreasonable request, given, well..."
The Quermian tips his head to the image now in the hollow, of the younglings cut down in the street, of the huddled Yamri facing a firing squad. Wynn's sorrow and disquiet with the violence is clear and a powerful motivator.
"The Kalish will not stop,"
Sadek says.
"They must be put down."
"The Republic is not here to retaliate for you, Speaker Sadek. We're here to offer only our assistance in preserving your people,"
Lusurn cautions. His blade arms click, and the Yamri does not reply.
"If we are at an impasse, perhaps we should break and rest for a while,"
Nasadeh offers the room. Bode glares at him, but Sorn and Sandra nod agreeably, Sandra looking deeply troubled.
This is one of the young Chalactan woman's first extra-republic negotiations, and no matter what they do, there will likely be more bloodshed before they are through. Speaker Sadrek, will we be joining you for a meal? It is customary in such arrangements for the hosts to provide. He smiles, and Obi-Wan does not like that smile. It's pleasant, it suits his master's face, and somehow it is still a sneer. How no one else can tell, Obi-Wan doesn't know, but his master is clearly viscerally opposed to the Yamri. Obi-Wan just doesn't know why.
The Yamri are a predatory species, Master Nasadeh, the protocol droid chirps. Their diet may be unpalatable for your species.
I'm an omnivore, Nasadeh replies implacably. Provided the meal is not outright toxic to my digestive system, I will be very pleased to sample what the Yamri have to offer, though I cannot speak for my fellow delegates. Speaker Sadek sways a bit, not unlike Quermian Tent to when in thought.
Arrangements will be prepared, the droid reports. If you wish to rest in your rooms, the Yamri hope that soon you will have settled the matter, so that their people come to no further harm. It is quite dire.
Yes, Nasadeh replies evenly, eyes glittering. It is. Master, Obi-Wan questions, when they are alone in the quarters the Yamri have given them. They are open in layout and rather entirely unadjusted for human occupancy. Why did you volunteer us for this mission? The Senate did not request a Jedi accompaniment. They did not, Ben nods to his apprentice, lowering himself to sit on a wide, curved bench that was a little too tall. And yet the proposal Delegate Wynn spoke of to deploy 50 Jedi to quell the violence was already written in offer, should the committee agree to such course of action. They wanted us to intervene, but did not offer us any oversight regarding that decision.
But they accepted when you volunteered.
They had little choice in the matter, Ben explains to him, idly stroking his beard. If they refuse our request, it would stand to reason we might refuse theirs if it came to it.
That's why Representative Bode keeps watching us, isn't it?
He did not want us here, Ben nods again. Hands falling to his lap, and he leans forward on his elbows.
So there is something wrong, Obi-Wan concludes, crossing his arms. They're not telling us the truth.
Obi-Wan hesitates, his next question on the tip of his tongue. But the steady gaze of his master prompts him to ask,
How did you know about the Yamri crisis and the proposal and that there was something wrong with the whole thing? Did you have a vision?
His master is quiet a moment, still watching him steadily.
Of a sort, he sighs,
brushing non-existent dust off his knees and sitting back upright. Have you ever heard of Galadran? Obi-Wan frowns, something familiar about the name, but nothing solid in his memory. He shakes his head.
Galadran was...
Ben pauses, presses his lips together, shakes his head, and tries again, anger rising and dispersing almost as quickly as it comes. Obi-Wan fidgets, nervous now. It started as a proposal much like this. The Jedi were called to a planet by the governor, claiming that true Mandalorians were slaughtering his people.
Were they?
Obi-Wan asks, wincing internally as he recalls that, technically speaking, at least as far as anyone is aware, his master is Mandalorian. No, but another Mandalorian faction, the Death Watch, to whom the governor was loyal, made certain that the Jedi did find bodies and bloodshed. I won't explain the difference in their ideologies now, but suffice to say, the Jedi made a grave error that day.
What happened?
Obi-Wan asks, feeling in his heart that he probably doesn't want to know, but feeling in the Force that he might need to. When confronted, the true Mandalorians resisted arrest, knowing a trap had been laid for them. A skirmish ensued, violence broke out, and the Jedi slaughtered the true Mandalorians. While the Death Watch laughed as we did their dirty work for them, Mandalore is still in conflict due to what happened that day, and to this day, they have received no recompense for our actions.
All of them?
Obi-Wan asks, disbelieving that the Jedi could... All but one, Ben murmurs, gaze cast away. Jango Fett, the last Mandalore. Obi-Wan swallows against the tightness in his throat, angry and horrified, uncertain and unbalanced. His master looks back up at him and holds out a hand. Obi-Wan forces his fingers to unbend, realizing they were clenched tight enough to ache, and steps forward, letting his master catch him and pull him in by the hand until they are nearly nose to nose. Ben leans forward until their foreheads touch and closes his eyes. Obi-Wan copies him and can feel his master's force presence wrap around his own, sheltering, comforting, guiding. He doesn't chastise Obi-Wan for his emotions, doesn't tell him to let go. Obi-Wan sucks in a few deep breaths, telling himself it happened, telling himself he can't change it, telling himself that if he knows, and now he knows, he can make sure it doesn't happen again.
"That's why we're here," he says,
pulling back so he isn't breathing on his teacher's face.
"To make sure what happened at Galadrant doesn't happen again."
He can feel the crawling feeling beneath his skin recede and his emotions settle. They're still there, but they aren't screaming at him, and he can deal with them later. He can feel pride blossom over the fragile bond between him and his master. "Yes, Padawan. That's why we're here." Ben knows his Padawan is worried, and not only about this mission and the shadows at play behind it, but about him as well. Ben is trying to keep the tension in his bones trapped inside his own skin, trying to keep the vicious, pointed temper of a GAR general held at bay. But it is so much harder than he remembers it being. This world feels familiar. He had stepped from his ship and into the air, and everything in his blood and his instincts had said, "I know this place." Ben had never been to Tavarsky, never been to Kali even, but that didn't matter, because this world was like all the other worlds, bathed in blood and treachery. Tavarsky was Melita Dan, was Mandalore, was Naboo, was Christophus, was Umbara, was Utapau, was Mustafar, and 100 upon 100 other battlefields. It was a veneer of civility over the ruins of what once had been, rife with the tide of fury, despair, hate, fear that pulsed through the Force from the Yamri and Kali alike, and underneath that, an invisible hand, insidious and untraceable, carving out a path for them to unwittingly follow, step by step towards destruction. Ben must ensure they step off the path. It was clear the Yamri did not entertain guests, but the protocol droid, at least, seemed to have ensured no one would be unintentionally poisoned at the table. It wasn't a compatible height for many of the delegation, and so suitable stools had to be found for each of them, but the spread was lavish enough. At the head of the table was the Yamri leader, and on either side of them for 3 seats were the chieftains, and then Speaker Sadek, and then the guests. The opposite end of the table was left empty, as no one was meant to be equal to the Yamri Chief of Chiefs. That empty place, of course, is where Ben moves his Padawan to. The Yamri chitter and click in agitation. The droid does not translate. The delegates glare at Ben. He merely smiles passively at them and retakes his own seat. The table is laden with roasted meats, brightly colored, fuzzy-skinned fruits, a soft, spongy cheese schmear, and eggs ranging in size from cups of minuscule fish eggs to bowls of soft yellow eggs smothered in herbs to large, pink, globe-like eggs, each held in individual chalices,
accompanied by small dishes of sauce, and a spoon for scraping out the raw insides.
"Does this satisfy custom?"
Speaker Sadak asks, translated by the droid. "This is exactly what I was looking for," Ben replies, watching a droid server place one of the chalices before Obi-Wan, as he had been seated across from the Chief of Chiefs, and protocol dictated he receive the best of the best. His Padawan had looked consternated by the meal beforehand. Now he stared at this supposed delicacy in horror. "What is..." Obi-Wan stutters and then bites his lip, shooting a nervous look at the delegates and the table full of Yamri and then his master. His expression smooths over and he turns the chalice in his hands, cupping the bottom half.
"Might I ask what this is?"
he asks, clearer and seemingly less affected. "Your Padawan's first state dinner?" Sadrin whispers, sounding amused. "He should be glad it's not an Obeisian Spirit Day feast. I'm never accepting an invitation again." "Anything would be preferable to what they have just set before us," Ben replies casually. And Sadrin blinks in surprise and turns toward him fully.
"It is Hurama, young Jedi,"
the protocol droid answers him.
"A delicacy."
"What is Hurama?" Obi-Wan presses. And Ben pushes encouragement and resolve towards his Padawan, who is radiating grim determination, disgust, and a trickle of tightly controlled fear.
"Do not offend our hosts, Padawan Kenobi."
Representative Bode speaks up, shooting uneasy glances between guests and hosts.
"Fresh eggs served with syrup or sauce,"
the protocol droid answers him once more.
"Egg of what species?"
Obi-Wan continues, and the Yamri chatter, Speaker Sadek bowing his head under the angry hisses of the chiefs. The protocol droid looks at the egg, and then back at the Padawan.
"It is a Kalish egg, young Jedi,"
the protocol droid replies. And all the delegates from the Senate freeze in their seats, each eyeing the chalices on the table, horror rising up like a fog. Obi-Wan nods and finally does as he has wanted to do since he sat down, and scoops the live egg out of the chalice and tucks it protectively against his body, the light of the life within it dim in the Force, but not yet diminished completely.
"This will not stand,"
Lusun rumbles, her voice rising from the deep of her chest, hands pressed flat to the table.
"The Republic does not and will never condone the cannibalism of another sentient species, regardless of how that species has retaliated. Speaker Sadak, tell your leaders we will be reevaluating our position here quite severely. And though we may yet hope to stop the violence, this will not resolve itself in your favor."
"You cannot condemn an entire planet due to cultural practices. Never in Republic history have we flat-out refused aid without at least offering a chance,"
Bode protests, panting, which is his species' equivalent of sweating.
"Cultural practices!"
Sedrin exclaims, angry to her bones.
"Delegate Bode!"
Ben, while they argue through their shock, lifts the remaining eggs on the table with the Force, and he and his Padawan retrieve them. The Yamri do not intervene, but they watch, multifaceted eyes quite calculating, and they hiss and chitter. And Ben has a very bad feeling about that. "Obi-Wan, we must get these eggs back to the Kalish." Ben hurries his Padawan from the dining room, but not far. He has a duty to protect the delegates as well, and the Force is singing danger, danger, danger. He's glad that Obi-Wan wore his robe, as Ben passes over the Kalish eggs as carefully as he can, brushing over each small life with a pulse of the living Force, willing them strength. Two of them barely fit into the largest pockets on the robe. Two go in Obi-Wan's hood, nestled between his shoulders. And the last remains in Obi-Wan's hand, pressed to his torso. His other hand holds his lightsaber hilt. "You must," Ben revises, cursing himself for the display and knowing he had no choice but to reveal the deception openly. It had felt like the right course of action. It was, as it allowed for no confusion among the delegates, but it placed them all in danger. Go to the Kalish, now. I must look after the delegates and attempt to contact the Council.
Master!
Obi-Wan protests, a snarl of emotions and doubts in the Force, which Ben tries to smooth away with gentle pulses of trust. He tugs on Obi-Wan's Padawan braid.
Be safe, Obi-Wan. Trust in yourself and in the Force, Ben says, nudging the boy.
And strides back into the dining hall, listening to Obi-Wan's hurried step as he dashes away. Obi-Wan was not going to let himself panic, he was not. His master was terrifying and clever and always certain he would be fine. Obi-Wan, on the other hand, the jungle seems to whisper and shift around him, his quick, force-enhanced steps just barely scuffing the ground as he speeds to the east, where the reports had claimed the Kalish presence was strongest. He can feel the violence in that direction, the hate, fury, despair, fear that runs like rivers from the spring of war. It isn't night yet, but under the dense canopy it may as well be. Obi-Wan lets the Force guide him, shifting around trunks and vines and twisting roots that he can barely see, catching flicker flashes of creatures as he passes them by, flowing through the jungle like a fish flows through the river current, letting the path take him instead of taking the path. He'll never complain about blind sense training with his master ever again, no matter how many bruises it gives him and how humiliating it feels to lunge into walls or clip off of pillars or be tripped by an unexpected kick to his ankle and fall sprawling to the floor. To sense a blaster bolt fired your way while blind was something five-year-olds could learn, but then even a training bolt sung of danger threat in the Force. The passive environment, however, was much more difficult to feel the shape of.
If the Miraluka can achieve sight in absolute blindness, Padawan, so can you, his master told him. We all touch the same Force.
That didn't explain how the Miraluka achieved it, given they were born blind and the ability came to them naturally, but Obi-Wan's master never doubted his capability, even when Obi-Wan wished he would, if only so he could then give up. But he didn't, and so Obi-Wan didn't. The deeper into the jungle he gets, the less he fears discovery by the Yamri, and the quieter the warning in the Force grows. His fear dissipates, and his senses expand a little more. The jungle lives around them, but it's not like the Temple Guardians. These roots go deep, through layers of rich soil and bands of sand. The water is slow and lazy, and he can't feel either end of the rivers, the way you can feel the cycle of the water in the Room of a Thousand Fountains, one channel flowing from top to bottom and back around again. Something large and sinewy turns in the water. Small, limber-limbed creatures swing among the branches and reflective eyes watch him. The canopy reaches and reaches, each plant finding its patch of light, layers upon dense layers of foliage. He can sense it all in his mind's eye, like an afterimage burned into his retina. Brighter when he closes his eyes, thrumming with the Force, light pulling around him, clustered even on spores in the air and dark, sunk beneath the roots, decomposing flesh and bone and rotten leaves into base elements and turning into light again, as it feeds the trees. The five eggs he's carrying shine brighter still. They're slightly tensile, though he's careful not to jostle them too hard, lest the shell split or puncture. But he can feel movement in the one he has pressed against the soft of his belly. A protective surge of fury flashes up at the thought of what the Yamri have done and would have done. And it carries him onward with purpose.